Hi, this is Steve Poore, and you're listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. On Pioneers and Pathfinders today, we're joined by Chris Niedringhaus of Georgia State University College of Law. Chris has a few roles at the law school. She's Associate Dean for Library Information Services, Legal Tech and Innovation. She's the faculty director of the Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative, which we'll talk more about later. And she's a clinical professor of law. For over two decades, she's been a law librarian and law professor at universities throughout the United States. She's also been with the Center for Computer-Assisted Legal Instruction, better known as CALI, for more than 20 years in various roles, currently serving as an author, board member, and chair of the Legal Research Community Authoring Project Advisory Board. She's an executive committee member of the Association of American Law Schools section on technology, law, and legal education. Additionally, Chris has written and presented on topics such as legal research, teaching methods, and law library management. In our discussion, she talks about the Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative, which I found fascinating, how law students should approach legal technology, finding her own place in the legal world, and why she enjoys student hackathons. Thanks to Chris for making the time for such an interesting conversation. And thanks to each of you for listening. Chris, thanks for joining. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me, Steve, and I appreciate it.
I want to talk a little bit about your professional journey, but before I do that, those are long titles. Tell me what's encompassed within your scope, your academic scope.
So I started here as the Associate Dean for the Law Library, and a few years ago, GSU College of Law had started our Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative. And I had sort of, been in on the conversations. I taught a class that was part of the certificate program. But the people who had originally launched that program were ready to stop being administrators and go back to being, normal law professors and enjoying their research more. And so I was asked to take over the Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative. So we made it a department of the library, and I was able to hire a couple people, move somebody into a position, get a really nice group of people together. And in academia, they just keep adding things to your title instead of, shortening it in any way. So I figure by the time I retire, my title will take up an entire page or something. So, yeah.
Well, that's when you know you've made it, huh?
Right.
So let's stick with the Legal Analytics and Innovation Initiative. What is it and how does it fit within the mission of the law school?
Sure. So it launched, GSU's business school actually has an analytics lab, and some of the law school faculty were working with business school faculty who were also working with the analytics lab and wanted to launch a legal analytics portion of that in conjunction with some of the law school faculty. And so initially it started out with very much that analytics focus. And we offer an LLM. We have a certificate program in legal analytics. It's that branch of it, which we still have, is much more tech focused. The students are doing a lot more technology, legal technology sort of core work, if you will, some coding, really beyond just knowledge of the technology and its features and everything, but sort of getting under the hood, if you will, and working in that way.
Are they designing new products?
Well, so originally, no. With the analytics, what they were doing, they did some different projects. Some they worked with law firms and helped them do some analytics work, either on cases or for a group of cases. They've worked with, the College of Law also has a Center for Access to Justice. There's been some work done there. What we did when I took over LAII is expand that and provide more options. So one of my observations has been is that there are a lot of students who are interested in legal technology, but don't necessarily want to be the technologist. They want to have the knowledge. They want to understand what's happening. They want to be able to work with the technologist, but maybe they don't need to do the coding or something like that. So we now have two certificate options. We still have that legal analytics certificate and LLM, but we also have a legal tech and innovation certificate and LLM that is more working with tech, if you will, sort of giving them that knowledge and even working on things like project management, but they don't have to be quite as deep into the technology as far as being able to build it. However, several of our students or groups of students have actually started developing products, working with tech incubators and doing things like that. And those are not necessarily the analytics folks. So I think what we've found is sort of our goal was to provide a wider breadth of legal technology opportunity for the students so that they can do anything from just being sort of the person in their law firm who understands tech and can talk to the vendors and help ask the right questions about technology to designing technology products and running them. Because I am going to assume that you will agree with me when I say that people have to understand technology. There is no not understanding it. And if you don't have some level of comfort with legal technology and some understanding of how it works and the questions you should ask at a minimum, you're not going to be a successful attorney because that knowledge is just required.
Yeah, I would argue that it's an ethical requirement.
Exactly. You're going to get disbarred if you don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah, these days, I don't know how you serve your client adequately without understanding, at least at a rudimentary level, the technology that's available to help them solve their problem.
Yeah, I even to the point of I'm happy if there's students. We have the certificate programs. I love that. I love when students do that. But I also love when they just take one or two classes because I used to teach a legal practice technology class, and I would invariably, every time I taught, I would have some students who would say, I don't know that I should be in this class. I don't know anything about technology. And I'd be like, you are definitely should be in this class.
Right. You're perfect for it.
Right. And kudos to you for doing something that makes you uncomfortable and understanding that you're going to need to know how to do that. And so sort of our secret goal, all of us that are in LAII, is to provide as much technology training and education as we can to as many students as we can. And that goes beyond the certificate. That means, you know, trying to hit them with one class or a brown bag or whatever it is that we can do so that we can provide sort of a whole range of depths of instruction, be it small to large.
It sounds awesome. Give me an example of a couple of classes that would be included in the curriculum.
Yeah. So my law practice technology class has sort of been converted into an introductory class for both certificate programs. And we get a lot of students who take it who don't wind up doing the certificate, but it's sort of an introduction to legal technology, hitting sort of the different, you know, e-discovery, document automation, apps, different sort of big groups of types of legal technology, giving them an introduction and overview of it. And also one interesting thing, not just in that class, but sort of individually, everyone who's teaching in LAII, they have independently decide that one of the things that they need to make sure students understand how to do is to evaluate technology that they're looking at, which I think is really interesting. It's something that I did when I taught law practice technology, and each of the classes have some component of that because technology moves so quickly. By the time we teach them about it, something has changed. But what they need to know how to do is teach themselves about something and know the right questions to ask and know what to think about when they're evaluating a piece of technology. And I think it's interesting that everyone sort of independently came to the same conclusion. So that's a component of all the classes. So there's sort of an overview class. We do have a legal analytics one class, which does a little bit of coding, but it actually, there's also a lot of instruction about data and handling data and what does data mean, different statistical terms that they'll hear. I think that also helps them work with expert witnesses so they can sort of understand what people are saying to them. And then there's legal analytics two, which is more of the capstone class for the analytics track. And that goes a lot more in depth. They do a lot more data manipulation in that class. The capstone class for the legal tech and innovation track is called legal process engineering. And I love this class too, because the person who teaches it, Michelle Hook Dewey, she actually also has law firm experience and has worked with legal tech and law firms. And she set up the class for them to work on projects with real live clients. So I get to go and sort of watch the final presentations in some of these classes. And there was a group of students who were working with a law firm who wanted to select a document management system. And so the students work with them. They get instruction on project management, how to work in teams, all those sort of different pieces. And at the end, they did an analysis and did a presentation for the law firm of different options and the pros and cons and pricing. And it was really impressive to see them do that kind of work as law students. And I think the firm was very impressed. And then there was another group of students who were developing an interface between one of our state filing systems that is not super intuitive.
You're being kind, I suspect.
And trying to see if they could come up with a better interface, a more intuitive and helpful interface for that. And they actually had a firm that paid them over the summer to continue that work and to test it out on a larger scale to see if it was something they were going to continue working with. So one of the things that I just love about these classes in this area is the students just have the best ideas. We have, you know, students who are developing products, and I got to see one of our students present a demo of his product to, we hosted the ABA section on cybersecurity meeting here in January. And one of our students did a demo of his product that he's developing. And to me, it's just, it's so exciting to see what the students are doing. And, you know, we have to just sort of start them on the path and they take off running. And it's really exciting to watch. And it's just, you know, it's so much fun to do. So that's sort of an overview.
It sounds awesome. There's very little that makes me want to go back to law school at this stage of my career.
Yeah.
But if there is, it'd be something like that. So if you think about the last few years, we've had a couple of events that have, in my view, accelerated tech development and adoption. One is the pandemic and sort of everybody getting jerked into a virtual environment, and then generative AI. How has the student receptivity to these programs changed, if it has, as a result of those events? Are people more interested in these programs than they were? Are they more facile with technology than they were?
So I think that it more quickly made it more clear that people are going to have to be more adept at technology. And not just, I think the good part is not just Zoom, right, or whatever. You always hear about the digital natives and how adept they are at technology, and they're not. I mean, they're not, I don't mean that in a, but people assume that they understand the technology. They're users. They're very adept users of technology, but that doesn't mean they understand the technology. You know, one of the classes that's an elective in the certificate program is just I think it's called Legal Technology and Operations, but it's things like how to redact a document properly so that you don't do something stupid, as we've seen in the news, and not properly redact documents, or how to use an Excel spreadsheet, or to do things in Word that they know how to open Word and start typing, but they don't know how to use it more efficiently. And I do think that students are becoming more and more aware that they can use technology to be more efficient. And one of the things that I always try to convey to students is, it's great to learn technology so you can be that person in your firm or whatever who's the expert in technology and you can help that way. But you can also think about how you might be able to use technology to make your life better as an attorney so that you don't have to spend as much time working. And you can make choices and have a different work-life balance than maybe you've originally thought about.
Does that resonate with students, or do they worry about the impact of this evolving technology on their employment?
I am not seeing a lot of students who are worried that they are going to be replaced by technology. I think what they see is it's going to change. They may be doing not as much of the lower level, you know, things that require less sort of intellectual capacity, and they may be doing higher level things. I don't see a lot of students worrying that there's not going to be jobs for them. And I personally don't think that's true. I mean, I've been doing this long enough. This will really date me. Law librarianship is a second career for me. And when I started, I was teaching every single 1L student how to use Shepherds in print.
I remember the things that we used to call, I think they were called books.
Yeah.
When I was in law school.
So, you know, just in the time that I've been a law librarian, the technology for using a citator, Shepherds or Keysight, has moved from using a book and using paper pamphlets and making sure that you checked all the different things that you were supposed to check in print, and being able to go online, put your citation in and press a button and get the results. That's simply a technology change. And to me, we're having a technology change, right? It's going to make us more efficient and more effective in some ways, but there are going to still be other things that we have to do. And I think that's how students see it. I don't see a lot of student concern that they're going to be replaced.
I'm curious, what's the discussion like in the faculty community about the impact of technology? I know there's lots of sort of discussions in academia about what does it mean for testing? What does it mean for skills learning? How have you guys sort of talked this through?
So I think there is a wide range of responses. There are people on one end, when ChatGPT came out, they panicked and frankly didn't really understand the technology. And that's fine. You know, that wasn't on their radar. That's not what they're focused on. But because they didn't understand the technology and it wasn't really in their view, thinking about how this might change legal practice, it was just a no disrespect, but panicked response to generative AI.
I think that was typical in the industry generally. You know, people were freaked out.
Right. So there's one end of the spectrum. And then in between, there's all these different responses. Personally, I think, so there are people who are like, we just can't let them use it. I'm like, okay, well, they can't use Word then. They can't, you know, use Grammarly. We have to stop and think about what we're saying. And personally, I think we actually have an obligation to teach them how to use it and teach them how to use it ethically and responsibly and efficiently and to understand what it is that they're doing. And so you get this response across the spectrum. There are people who also believe that we should be teaching them how to use it, but they need to teach themselves first. And mad props to those people, because that's sort of, to me, the scariest point, because you're like, I need to teach them how to do this, but I can admit to myself that I don't know what I'm doing. And so I have to learn myself. And those people, I think, are going to be really important in this process, because they will teach themselves how to use it and think about how students might be using it when they, you know, are in practice. And they're going to help students not just learn it in a vacuum, if that makes sense. So if we can spread that instruction throughout the curriculum, I think that's more helpful to the students.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Let's talk a little bit about your professional journey. I know you've got a master's and you've got a JD. Of course, I've seen a graduate. I don't know the sequence in which you took those things. Did you always want to be, you focused in library sciences, particularly in the legal space, for a pretty long time?
I have, but I actually did the JD first.
What made you want to be a lawyer?
When I went to law school, I wanted to work with abused women and children. And I discovered that I don't think I have the proper temperament to do that. I've done some volunteering, and I did some in college and in law school, volunteering with abused children and children who'd been removed from their home, and did some of that in law school too. And I just don't have the temperament to do that. I think you have to do that kind of work, you have to both care enough and also be able to disengage at some point. And I was concerned about the disengagement piece of that, to be quite honest.
I can understand.
And then I also was interested in environmental law and realized that the type of environmental law work that I wanted to do would probably not pay back my law school loans. So I did something different. I worked for a couple of years after law school in an actually kind of a not a standard law job. I worked for a university, and then I decided I wanted to do something different. And it was kind of a process, figuring out what you want to do.
It's never linear, is it?
Right. But I knew I enjoyed working at the university. I enjoyed working with the students. I was doing student discipline for the university, which was the part that I wanted to leave behind. And so it was, you know, there were a number of people who were really helpful in sort of letting me talk through what is it I want to do now. And, you know, I'm really lucky because I love my job. I love what I do. I mean, you know, as with anything, there are always things that we don't love about our job, but I really feel like I know a lot of people who don't love their job, and I do. And we spend a lot of time working. So to do something you don't love is unfortunate to me.
Did the interest in technology come as a result of your focus on information sciences? Is it a natural outgrowth of that? Or
no, I worked in a computer lab in college back when it was dial-up and 5 1/4 floppy disks or whatever, dating myself again, which I actually just came from growing up, I think, as a kid. We had, when my father's employer rolled out computers, they didn't roll them out for everyone. They sort of picked people that they thought would be interested. And my dad was one of those people. We had, as a small child, we had, I don't even know what it was, you know, probably like a Commodore that you hooked up to the TV and it was in like black and green or whatever. And
I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm dating myself again. But, you know, we always had stuff like that. So it was never scary. And even beyond technology, just sort of my mom was a chemist. My dad was a chemical engineer. We were sort of raised with the idea that you kind of play around and figure out what works as long as you don't blow anything up. Because I do think that's a mindset. And I think that people who are interested in technology have to have that sort of willingness to mess things up.
Yeah, that is a more scientific approach to it than typically the legal profession where we're so focused on not making mistakes.
Right. You have to know when you can make mistakes and when you can't.
Right. Do you find your students have that mindset these days as they work in technology? Are they more willing to push boundaries and explore things, even if they're not going to be perfect?
So I think it depends upon the student. I mean, you know, law school is such a weird experience, right? Because there's the curve and it can be very stressful. Georgia State, and I think every school I've ever worked at, has a part-time program and an evening program. And we have a lot of students who this is not their first career, or they've taken time off between college and law school. And I went straight from college to law school. I'm not knocking that. But what I have found in schools that have a part-time program, or we have a lot more students for whom they have been out and done other things, is that they have a better sense of what's important in law school, if that makes sense.
It does. That maturity and life experience makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. And they sort of know how it works out in the world, and they're more willing to play around, if you will, but also understanding when you can do that and when you can't is important. One of the things that I did when I taught law practice technology, and that I've done for a couple of our classes, I've gone into the class and done this, is I started doing a mock hackathon. Every student would have to come in and do like a 2-minute pitch for a product. So they would do the pitch, and then the students would vote. And it was usually pretty clear. You get like 2 or 3 different concepts that people wanted to work on. And then they would go and create their product. So whether that be drawing pictures on giant post-it notes, or I've had students who got on their phone and started building apps on their phone during the hackathon. So, yeah, I mean, it's so fun to watch this. Like, they're amazing. And they come up with such great ideas. And I also tell them, I modeled it on the legal hackathon that's done. So I'm like, you know, there's sort of the public good side, or there's the private, you know, helping attorneys do things. And so they'll come up with ideas on both. And then they come back and they pitch like they're in Tech Show Startup Alley. They vote on which idea wins. And it is so amazing to watch them. It's just incredible. So sorry, I got off on a tangent there.
No, it's all right. But it was a fascinating one.
Yeah. I think they're so creative. It's just like, really, we just sort of have to give them some tools and kind of encourage them and give them the opportunity to create things and think about new ways to do things.
Yeah, you know, I get asked sometimes about people who want to go to law school and want to, you know, what's the future of being a lawyer? And, you know, I tell them that I don't think there's ever been a more interesting time to be a lawyer. If you're curious, if you're creative, if you're willing to test yourself, there's so many cool things you can do that weren't there when I was going to law school, for sure.
Yeah, it's really opened up how they can think about how they want to practice law and what they want to do. I was, several years ago, I was presenting at a CLE. I was doing like a tech and ethics thing, but there was a woman there who's an attorney, and she had sort of built her own platform, and she was not billing by the hour. She was billing by what task the client wanted. And she had built this whole life for herself where, because of what she had built using technology, she could be sitting watching her kid's soccer game or, you know, on a beach in Mexico and earning money because she's using technology to help her facilitate this and then providing her own intellectual work to it. But I like to use that example for the students because we've all seen people who get lost in their law job and wind up having maybe not the balance that they really would have preferred in their life. And I think it's really important that we also put that out there for people. You can use technology to help you do more work, but you can also use technology to help you do more play. So,
and finding that balance is important.
Yeah, And that balance is different for different people.
Right, absolutely. Well, Chris, I know we've run over our time. I appreciate your indulging us. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me. I love to talk about our students and what they're doing with tech. So
you're doing some really cool things down there.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. Be sure to visit thepioneerpodcast.com for show notes and more episodes. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.